Order, it's 1:36 p.m. on the 17th of February, 2014. We have members present, Representative Munoz, Representative Guerra Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, Representative T. Wilson. Trying to give her a different... Representative Thompson, Representative Newman, Representative Edgman, and Representative Costello preparing to join us from the witness stand. We have a quorum to do business. Anything to the good of the order before we start? Representative Costello, would you like to invite your staff up here, too?
I would like to invite my lead, Charles Ginter.
Okay. We saw a presumption that he's already up here, so he's new to the committee, I guess. Welcome. We have before us House Bill 32, lines of business on business licenses. I believe we have a Labor and Commerce CS before us. Representative Newman, would you like to adopt that as a working document for the House Finance Committee consideration?
Version N, I believe.
Version Y.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to...
Is that the most current? Sometimes I get things out of order. It's been here since late last, arrived at the end of last session. Is that the version we're working off? That's my understanding.
It is, Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Newman, you were correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce for committee consideration, committee substitute for House Bill number 32, Labor and Commerce, version / Y for committee discussion and referral.
Hearing no objection, Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Representative Nia Costello. I represent District 20 in Anchorage. And the bill before you, House Bill 32, does two things. One, it allows for individuals who apply for a business license through the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development to list several lines of business under their business, one business license. Currently, if you apply for a license and the work that you're doing with that license falls into several categories, then you are required by the state to get several business licenses. And so in an effort of just a common sense approach to the licensing, what this bill does is it allows you to get one business license and list the activities or the categories on that license, and there you can list as many as are appropriate for the business that you're doing. The other part of the bill came to me at the request of a constituent who had applied for a business license, and when she realized that she had in error put the wrong name in the business, she was not allowed to make a change to her license application, because in statute we don't allow for such a change. And this bill would give a 30-day time period to folks so that if, for example, they are applying for a business and they put down something that, you know, maybe a business name that they don't necessarily like, they can actually make that change within a 30-day period. With that, Mr. Co-Chair, I would like to take, you know, questions.
I thought we'd do, because most of the questions are going to probably be on the fiscal note issue. There isn't any, but I would like to take the public testimony bring up Mr. Haviger and probably have you join him there as well.
Thank you.
But we'll take the public testimony and then come back to the discussion with the department. The public testimony, we have Peggy Ann McConaughey from the National Federation of Independent Business. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Welcome. My name is Peggy M. McConaughey, and I'm a real estate broker with ACH Consulting here in Juneau. I'm here just briefly to testify and say I'm fully in support of the bill. Number one, I have a real estate license. I have a business license, but I'm also required by the law currently to have a separate license for something else that I do underneath that broker's license, which is real estate education. I travel all throughout the state and teach, but I'm required, as it currently is listed in the state, to have a separate business license, and I frankly feel that that's just a little silly. It's onerous, it doubles my fees, and frankly the cost of business today is getting more than we all would like, and I'd like to try to keep my fees down, so I encourage you all to please help this bill pass. Thank you.
Ms. McConaughey, do you also represent, you represent a position for the NFIB?
I'm also a member of NFIB.
Speaking for yourself today?
But I'm speaking
okay,
for myself. Thank you.
I saw a little slash self, NFIB. I wanted to acknowledge there was a new letter from NFIB, but we'll let anybody from that organization that wishes to testify
great.
Officially. Any questions for Ms. McConaughey?
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify here in the... Here in the audience. Is there anybody online wishing to testify on the bill? We'll go ahead and close public testimony, but we'll retain the option for opening it if there's relevant discussion that folks that become aware of this and have something they want to add. We have, So Representative Costello and Mr. Haberger, why don't you join Mr. Haberger up here. Mr. Haberger, you're here. You wish to testify, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you as well. So we'll let you start with introductory remarks and discussion, ranging from the content of the bill to the fiscal note. I think the fiscal note is a big essence of the bill. So,
very good, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. The reason why I asked to testify, yes, instead of just questions, is just a comment about Section 3. Section 3 was pointed out by the bill sponsor, and it is the section that opens up essentially any change in a business license with for that first 30 days after it is created. One of the issues that we see from time to time in the division is that a business license through ownership is in dispute. A dispute may be partners that for some reason don't agree. It's kind of a rare occasion. But if we do this, partners who may not be agreeing in the creation of their organization, we may see incidences where one will set in a license, change ownership slightly in one form or another, and then we may see it reoccurring for 30 days. So that's just a potential out there. Only wanted to bring it to the committee's attention and have no other comments and open for questions.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure to verify one fact. So to be able to do this, the name of the company has to be exactly the same for both activities that they have. So, for instance, if I'm Wilson's sewing and snow plowing, and so I would have to get one license instead of one for sewing and one for snow plowing. But if I were to change the name into something completely different, that would be a different business.
Is that a question or a statement?
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to figure out. Yeah.
Okay.
So I understand being in the name and having two things going and getting one license. But now if I change the name completely, would that, although I'm still an owner of another business, would that require me to have two?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, if I understand the scenario or the question correct, the way we read 32, if you have everything identical, owners the same, name the same, you want to do business as Bob Inc., then you could have multiple lines of business. You could be an educator. You could be a real estate broker, for example. That would be permissible under 32. If those things are the same, and it's a partnership, and Bob and Bob, again, Bob squared, become partners, it could be, and that was the only reason for my comment, it could be that Bob squared could send in a new application and try to take Bob first out. That was the only comment. We've seen it on a few occasions.
Bob squared is still only one Bob, if my math is correct.
I probably shouldn't have used that as a as the example.
But I've listened to Bill squared a lot of years here.
Yeah.
Representative Wilson.
Thanks for follow-up. I guess I just want to make sure that, you know, like you said, it's one name, but if I'm still an owner of, let's use your Bob Inc. or whatever, but now I want, you know, Sally something for a different business, although I'm still an owner, that new business name would then need a new business license. I couldn't have, as an owner of a business, two different business names out there underneath this one license.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure.
Representative Newman and then Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Habinger. And, Mr. Chair, you remember an issue that you helped me deal with a couple of years ago with a brewery up in the Talkeetna area, which was required to have a business license for a brewery, and then they wanted to open up into a restaurant. And because of the statutes at the time required them, the statute it says that you can't own a brewery or, a restaurant if you already have a brewery business license. And I know that's in statute, and it's something that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board works under, but to me this would simplify the issue and say that you can have one business and operate those businesses under that. Can you give me some comments on that?
Representative Newman, through the chair, in that particular instance where the brewery wanted to change license and were prohibited, if I remember correctly, there are some licensing requirements of other organizations, other agencies, that business licensing does not touch. That is one of those cases. There are still those licensing requirements. For example, let's say professional licensing. We take care of professional licensing. Statute currently requires that a professional license is secured before a business license can be secured. I don't see a change to that in 32. Those requirements still would be need to be made. However, for those businesses that have the same name, want to do multiple lines of business, that's what this bill addresses. And if it becomes law, that's what we'll implement.
The regulation of the alcohol industry will remain as complicated and convoluted as it always has been, irrespective of House Bill 32. Is that correct? No, you don't have to answer that.
Mr. Chair.
That was a statement. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman.
Thank you. This is the first I've heard the bill, of course, and like Representative Wilson, I need clarity. Small business, and that's the goal, is to help small businesses in the state of Alaska. And how do you – is small business defined in statute?
Representative Osterman, to the co-chair, not to my knowledge. I can't think of any small business definition.
That brings up the question then to me is, and I'll use an example. I don't know where we would go with something like this because a native corporation, for example, has, under the regional corporation of, let's say, my district, Koniag Incorporated, how many subsidiaries does it have underneath it? And how many businesses then of licenses do they currently have that then become lumped under, could become lumped under one, if I understand this, with no definition of small business, of where, how far does this go? And then the next question then would be, how many licenses could you wrap under one umbrella? And so I'm a little nervous without some parameters, some sideboards here that would get us to taking care of the small mom and pop's operations. I think that's really your major goal, if I understand correctly. But I don't see that within the bill at this point in time.
Representative Costello?
Through the co-chair, Representative Osterman. So to answer your second question, if the business name is the same and the lines of business, and actually we call it in the bill trade, services, professions, or activities, any that the business is conducting would be allowed under one license. And that list involves about 20 different categories, from educational services to arts, entertainment, and recreation. In terms of the question related to higher levels of categories, I would prefer that Mr. Habinger answer that one.
Mr. Mr. Habiger, who would like to add to Representative Costello's response.
Representative Osterman, through the co-chair. A current requirement in regulation is that businesses operate their activity, i.e. advertising, with the name that they are licensed. I'm not sure. I hadn't thought through enough, I think, how 32 might change that. But I would tend to think that a large organization that may have established businesses that may have brand identity may continue or choose to keep that brand identity. They may, on the other hand, choose to consolidate under that corporate name, in which case I don't see 32 preventing them from doing so, and we could offer them one business license for whatever they do.
Thank you. And just a follow-up comment. And I see a lot of licenses and a lot of businesses advertise DBA and doing business as. And so I'm wondering how far we'll go with this without some kind of parameters. That's a conversation I'll have as we go through this process.
Representative Munoz, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thompson, and then...
So an individual that applies for a business license, if they're a professional, also applies for a professional license. Have you given any thought to consolidating those two processes into one application or giving the opportunity for a realtor or an engineer when they're making their professional license application to also get their business license?
Representative Munoz, through the chair. I would say, have I given thought? Yes. Are we there yet? No. One of the issues that we are dealing with, and we're making progress, but we're not there yet, is a rewrite of professional licensing database. And until we kind of have that upgrade, it's difficult under our current system to probably match those two databases and achieve that end.
So as you're rewriting the system, though, isn't this a great opportunity to look at that ability to be able to consolidate the two?
Yes.
Did you have anything else?
Well, I'm working with the sponsor on this issue, and we've discussed it. I think it would be an opportunity to, you know, to ease some of the burden on our business people by consolidating those two applications.
You might be a due pass. Representative Thompson, and then Edgman, and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think current statutes say that the division is supposed to have taken enough revenue to cover their expenses. I'm showing a $37,500 drop in revenue for this type of action. Does this mean that we're going to have an increase in business licenses for other people, for all businesses?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, currently the corporations, we lump corporations and business licensing activity in the agency. They bring in more revenue than they require for operations. And I don't see this bill changing the whole dynamics of that. I do see an impact, but I still think the organization will bring in more revenue than expenses.
Thank you.
Representative Edgman, and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thompson actually asked the question I was going to ask, but just to add to his comments, you know, sometimes I think the benefit does far outweigh the cost, and 30-some-odd grand to me is not a large sum of money when it comes to providing conveniences and maybe allowing these businesses to go out there and prosper even more so than they would have had to dealing with the paperwork of getting additional licenses. One quick comment, if I may, to Representative Osterman's question about the native corporations. I have a little bit of experience with this, and I don't play an attorney on TV either, but the subsidiary companies at least in the village corporation that I'm in, for indemnification purposes, are very careful to set up the corporate liability with new businesses. So, you know, if you had a subsidiary company establish limited liability companies, for example, underneath it, you would have separate paperwork in terms of the corporate structure, and I wouldn't imagine that that would require more licenses. So,
for whatever that's been more just dialing the attorney than they do paying a business license. I mean, yeah. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. First of all, Mr. Haberger, this one's to you. I've had one constituent call me. I personally have a conflict on this myself, though I've actually become such a successful writer that it doesn't apply to me anymore because I now make more than $1,000 a year sometimes on a good year. But there are people who are very honest and who run small businesses who show up one time a year at a fair, at a craft fair, at maybe at AFN, and they sell the things that they've made. The statute itself says unless you engage in a regular business, you don't have to buy a business license. And in any definition under my mind, somebody does this once a year, that's not a regular business. But I've been told in responding to the constituent a number of years ago that the division considers even one time showing up to do that business once a year for an hour a regular business, and therefore that person has to buy the $100 a year business license, which $100 a year to a law firm that makes $1 million a year is nothing. $100 a year to somebody who makes $300 a year is a 33% income tax. So does your division still interpret it that way? If you do the business just one day a year, that counts as a regular course of business, and therefore you still have to get a business license?
Representative Guerra, through the chair. I hope not. I'll ask staff, and if correction need to be made, I would agree with you. One time a year is not regular business the way I read that exemption.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Though in the past, that's exactly what we've been told, so I hope the policy has changed so we can tell constituents something different next time they ask. Then, just through the chair, a follow-up on Representative Osterman's question, actually to the sponsor. I like the idea of the bill. Having gone through these with my little business, I didn't know how many boxes I had to check once, so I understand the problem. You give the example of the person who has two small businesses and the sponsor statement. But there are also bigger businesses that do, and frankly, I'm going to say this without knowing for sure because I don't know if architects and engineers can be in the same company, but you have some businesses, large businesses, that do many different things. Maybe it's architecture and planning and surveying, or maybe it's oil and gas and drilling and excavating and shipping. And I'm sure there are much larger businesses out there other than a small business. But one way to limit this to small businesses would be to say if you have, let's say, 10 employees or less or 15 employees or less at the start of your business license period, and who cares if you hire more during the next 2 years, then 2 years from now you'll have to apply again, and if you have more than that amount, that's fine. But could you limit it to small businesses by saying at the beginning of the business license period you not have more than, let's say, 10 employees? And would that do violence to the idea that you're trying to get across in this bill?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, in the fiscal note, the department has indicated that of the 60,000 business licenses that are currently administered by the state, this bill would affect 750. Perhaps that question is for the department in terms of what types of businesses they've identified would take advantage of this. It's my understanding that if you have an elaborate structure or a higher type license for a corporation or an LLC, that you might not be interested in reapplying for a business license because of the generational history that you have with that business. But for those people the member here in Juneau who testified, this bill is targeted towards the Alaskan who is applying for a business license. And falls into these categories and doesn't want to have to pay for two licenses. But I would also ask the department to respond in terms of how they identify those 750 that would be affected.
We'll come back to that. I just want to, a couple of the items that were put on the record, vendors at Alaska Federation of Natives, whether in Fairbanks or Anchorage, and Alaska State Fairs, I think those are not single-day type activities. The Alaska State Fair is probably one-third of the city of Palmer's sales tax revenues for the year. Probably also has an impact. Fairbanks doesn't have a sales tax anymore, and jurisdictions will often set up requirements of what you need for permitting within their own jurisdictions. We have at least one former mayor here. It's not as simple. I don't want on the legislative record, though, that we're suggesting we're going to exempt state fair vendors or AFN vendors. They're multi-day things. That's really up. The activities certainly vary, but I don't want expectations raised on here. I certainly don't want to punish the city of Palmer inadvertently because there's some interpretation from testimony in this committee. But, well, Representative Thompson, you had a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As a follow-up to the last question I had about whether there be an increased cost in business licenses, you indicated that you already collect excessive amounts. Does that mean we're going to have a reduction in the cost of business licenses? I mean, where does this all fit in with where are you at income-wise and costs?
Representative Thompson, through the chair. Business licensing statutes have the fee set in statute. We don't regulate that. The legislature does. Currently, it's $50 per year. We do offer a biennial license type, so they can pay $100 and get a two-year license.
And my other question, thank you, is out of curiosity, vendors that sell trinkets or homemade knives out of their pickup or the back of their van, they're required to have a business license, I assume?
Representative Thompson, through the chair. Statute, the way I interpret it, or we interpret it, is that for the privilege of doing business, you need a business license. Definitions go on to define business as a benefit to, you know, the business person, kind of quantifying or saying a financial benefit. And I realize what Representative Guerra was saying. I appreciate Chairman's comments. Truly, if the activity is for financial gain, truly, if it's conducting business, I would say they need a license. With reference to Representative Guerra's one-off kind of comment, there is that exemption in there, and if staff need to consider that activity a little more carefully, I'll ask them to do so.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed it. Of the 750 businesses, though, what was the average? Because I'm kind of the same place. I want to help small business, all there is, but, you know, usually that's not, you know, who takes the advantage. So you've designated 750 businesses when you've come up with this fiscal note. What was the average, you know? I mean, how did you come up with that?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. A business license has certain elements by statute at this point in time. They're not required to report their size to us. They give us their name, their address, their ownership. There's a few other criteria. When we saw 32 and the potential, or trying to quantify 32's potential impact, we looked at ownership name, business name, and identified all those business names that had multiple, all those business names that occurred more than once is probably the best way to say it, and then looked at their line of business. Line of business, as we heard earlier, is education versus retail, whatever. And then we matched those. The number that we came up with based on the current way we gather data was approximately 750. So we can only assume that if HB 32 passes, we have potentially 750 single-named organizations out there, multiple lines of business that might take advantage of it.
Thank you.
Representative Osterman and then Newman.
Changing the wording in here from line of business to trade, service, profession, or activities. Are all four of those words defined in statute?
Mr. Habiger.
Co-Chair Osterman, they are. They're in definition, which is where that was pulled from.
And that's where you would pull the 700 names, 700 possible business, 750 possible business licenses, based upon those definitions.
Representative Osterman, again, it was a search of the database. Let me see. The trade, service, profession, and activity is a definition, and I don't remember the exact section there of statute where it's found. But I believe it's connected with business activity, and that's where we see that appear. However, when we did the check, it was those that identified a separate line of business if they had the same business name.
Okay, I'm going to have to go into the statute, I guess, and look it up. I'll look it up. Thanks.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Habiger, is the Department of Commerce ever issued any citations, fines, or penalties on any people doing business in the state of Alaska who did not have a business license?
Representative Newman, through the chairs, the answer to that is it's difficult. There's a fine. If I remember right, it's a civil fine, but there's a fine limit of $300 in statute. And for us to engage resources to collect $300, it's significantly more for an investigation to come up with that standard proof so that we can say they're practicing without a license. What we use as a deterrent is a letter saying that here are the statutes and you are required to purchase a business license.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted clarification on that because I think it would benefit possibly the department because people who may be concerned about that have multiple business licenses to just go ahead and buy their one business license. It would be a benefit to the department in that way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think my question is pretty obvious, and the answer is probably no, but are there any IRS or tax complications that might come from having these multiple sort of businesses under one license?
Representative Edgman, through the chair, I think that question was for me, and I can't answer that question. I'm not familiar enough with federal tax statutes.
That's for the business to decide whether or not it's complicated, too complicated. That's the beauty of this. If it becomes complicated, they may decide they don't want to do it.
Well,
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, and again, I support the bill. I think it's a good idea. I'm not trying to slow things down here, but it's something that perhaps should be researched along the way. I'd offer. Because you can just imagine if you had these different businesses and the write-offs and one business license. And I mean, I own a couple of businesses, and they're very distinct and different, each one of them, with the licenses thereof. So you can definitely see some scenarios. So I'll just put it out there in terms of a potential research item.
I know during my first term here, I believe, we had a business license increase, and I think I got an amendment through for a reduction in seniors. And the example was a lot of our elderly residents supplement their meager incomes to try to get some of the luxuries like food and medicine and things like that. They'll sell Avon or they'll do needlepoint or do very de minimis activities, and it really is a roadblock. And And if they're doing multiple things, and I know a lot of very very industrious seniors, they can think, and it might be under Mabel's services, and they do needlepoint, they might do babysitting, they might do a whole list of things that they'd have to figure out what they were going to list. And that's the example. I think this would be a great bill. And I guess into the other complications where we get into the argument we're having on a lot of other bills, where it's not a fee that supports services. It's a revenue. We're going to have this debate on other bills, I assume, later in the session. It's whose hip pocket does it belong in? And that's the drive my. But we have to look at it. We're also in fiscal crisis. I'm not sure. I'd rather make it somewhere else other than a few bucks on punishing a guy that is trying to work hard all year, not filing unemployment. Might do construction. He has his trucks. He wants to keep his employees working. He might do snow plowing. That's how we had a business that did the road service area in Chugach Eagle River. They really like to keep their employees on year round. I don't know if they would have taken advantage of this. Their business plan might have been more complicated, but I know the Anderson brothers did construction in the summer, and they had the snow plowing contract. They really liked that because they kept their people on year round or pretty close to that. I don't know if they, under their structure of being a larger company, if they would have fallen under this, but I can see that on a micro with a much smaller guy who might do driveway sealing, and then he uses his truck to plow roads. I mean, this is not the easiest economy to work in if you're in the private sector. So anyway, that's too much editorial, but Representative Guerra.
Oh, that was a clearing of my throat, but I do have a question. Sorry.
Yes, there you go.
Mr. Haberger, so Representative Stoltz was correct. There are people who do state fair vending, and they've got somewhat more substantial businesses. What I was more thinking about, so when you're getting back to me, there's somebody I know of who maybe produces three pieces of sort of hobby stained glass during the year. So it does it three times, makes almost no money on it, makes a little bit of money, a couple $100. And that's the kind of person I'm thinking about, whether you would consider them the kind of person who has to get a business license. So three pieces of stained glass during the year makes a few $100. And that's the kind of person I'm wondering whether or not you would require to have a business license under your current rules.
Representative Guerra, through the co-chairs, we'll get back to you on that one.
Yeah. Thanks.
And I remember there was a newspaper story, and he's now deceased, and he was a colorful life character in Anchorage, and in Floyd, who would hold up the sign and wave, "I am Floyd." And he sent in a business application to the Department of Commerce, I think Randall Burns was the director back then, so that might have been all the way back to Sheffield. And he said, and I don't remember his last name, everybody in Anchorage probably knew him as Floyd. He said, "Floyd, this really isn't a real business or an activity, and then here's your 50, I think it was in $25 or $50 back. And do you run into that very often, where you return a fee? This is not an activity that is licensable, or is that an aberration?" I will say there was a businessman during the Safeway Cars merger. I guess he wanted to hire Floyd to hold up a sign that said, "Dear Attorney General Botello, I know more about mergers than you do, and I'm Floyd." But I don't know if he ever carried that sign, but that's how well-known Floyd was in Anchorage.
Mr. Chair, we certainly do refunds for business licensing, professional licensing when they're required.
Is that an aberration, though, predates you by probably a couple of governors, obviously?
I don't remember staff bringing me any kind of issue quite like that one.
So if somebody sent in a business license to do some type of a solicitous activity, would you send it back and say this is illegal, or I want to? What is the screening? We know that the folks at DMV won't let you put on a personalized license plate that says something profane or might be a double entendre. How do, it's outside of the scope of the what we're talking about on the funding, but I was I got you up here.
Yes, you do. Mr. Co-Chair.
And it's making you uncomfortable, which is making me enjoy it more.
Yeah, I see that. A business licensee, we request on the application that they present to us their line of business. The state of Alaska has adopted a number of lines of business through the North American Industrial Secure Business Code. It's a NIC code, and I can't quite remember that.
I put in an application for a business license, Joe's Graffiti Tagging. And that seems to be all over Anchorage, and somebody has put their name on there. They put in a business license. And that would you approve something like that? I see.
Yes, you're getting hesitation. You're absolutely.
Well, once you come in, I think we may see this bill again. Why don't you think about some of these over your ponderous.
I would hope not, but I'm not certain. How's that, Mr. Co-Chair?
Representative Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In principle, I do support the bill, and I think it's a good idea to help our small businesses across the state. And I came in here with the question on my mind, what is a small business? And if we don't have a definition, then it brings me back to changing the one line to trade, service, profession, and activities, which I would like to be able to go back and read and analyze a little bit to make sure that it's that's what we're doing and we're helping small businesses. And maybe Native corporations was a bad example of what I was thinking about, but a service of a transporter who's transporting freight across, he's providing a service. Can he also own a freight company, a oil company, shipping, some two or three, get into the construction business because he's providing a service, et cetera. So I don't know how deep that is. And how many that entails. So, Mr. Chairman, I would prefer that we hold this bill for a day or so and allow me to get more comfortable with it.
I do want to talk about the fiscal note today, so we
That's
can
fine.
Raise those questions. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do nonprofits that have commercial lines of business, are they required to get a business license?
Representative Munoz, through the co-chairs, a nonprofit does not need a business license, but many do get them. And again, it depends upon how they perceive and statute whether they have a financial benefit to gain. And so that's, again, we sort of leave that up to the nonprofit to determine. Whether they are in that business, and I can think of a number of nonprofits that may not solicit for funding through the state of Alaska. They would not need one.
That's an intentional nonprofit, right? That's a real serious question.
Yeah. I can think of nonprofits. I'm sorry, Mr. Co-Chair. There are nonprofits that may do service work in the state of Alaska, but their funding comes from outside. They may not solicit here. They are not required to have a business license.
If you have a regular commerce and it just doesn't pan out, you pay the license anyway.
Mr. Co-Chair, that's how we interpret it.
Yeah, a lot of folks we deal with, their nonprofit means something else. It means your business plan just didn't work.
So, and following up,
Representative Munoz.
So a nonprofit that has a retail store or any kind of retail activity, and the funds of which support the nonprofit, is that a business? Would that require a business?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, yes. We would perceive statute to say that that's a financial benefit, and we would ask them to get one.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Costello. I like the thought of this bill. And if you talk to municipalities about how this bill would affect them, because I'd like to see municipalities pick up the same concept, because as somebody who owns a state business license and a municipal business license and city licenses, they have different codes under them as per what type of business you do. Also, have you talked to the municipalities about possibly introducing legislation like this to help these businesses in the state of Alaska now?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I have not, but I have an appointment with Mayor Dan Sullivan in the next couple hours, and I can bring it up with him. I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, businesses will have to decide if they happen to live in the municipality of Anchorage. Mayor Dan Sullivan's people will probably have his tax assessment people say, well, yeah, 20 different businesses on here. You probably have a lot of inventory, and it may be Mayor Sullivan is always looking for ways to pay for things he wants. So, I mean, it may not be a financial benefit to put 20 different, 10 different activities or even five there, because you'll get the call from the muni, well, if you have this business, you must have that. They'll estimate it and send you a bill. So I just I want to send a caution to these people that some of our municipalities will be watching this, looking at a way to get into your pocket again. So that's fully informed business folks out there, I hope, knowing that you put all those down, you're going to open your door to a lot of possible other doors opening on your wallet. So on the fiscal note, Mr. Habiger, are there any complications on figuring this out? You figured out an estimated $37,500 reduction. We have 2-year license, 1-year license. We're on a state fiscal year starting January 1st and ending June 30th, and our business license fiscal year is January 1st to December 31st, or all the way to the next fiscal year or next calendar year as well. How does that complicate you trying to figure out how you're going to estimate and adjust those? Or how did those figure into your calculus, if they did?
Maybe that, Mr. Co-Chair, maybe going backwards and hitting the last question might be a little easier. First of all, it was a little difficult in trying to discern what level activity might be impacted by House Bill 32. Again, the name search and the connection with lines of business was the only way our data, current set of data, could discern that. One of the things that we thought about we didn't know how to quantify was the precise concern or comment from Representative Osterman. How a business will react to potential new circumstances. How many might consolidate and rename even to take advantage of it. We just can't quantify that. So when coming up with the 37, first of all, those that we could, 37.5 annual, potential annual impact, we looked at that 750, and basically every business, whether they buy a 2-year or a 1-year, pay $50 per year. And so we just took that 750 and we just spread it out across the years as an average, thinking it would even out.
Mr. Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. How many business licenses does the state have every year?
Representative Osterman, we have...
I mean, just an approximate.
Yeah, it's northward of 60,000. I can't remember if it's 63 or 67.
And I asked that question based upon your statement a minute ago that business license fees brings in more than it costs. So there's a positive number for the state of Alaska in transaction or selling businesses licenses. The relatively small amount of money that you're talking about costing the department is $37,500, small in comparison to the overall budget, that is. Makes me wonder why we don't spread
this type of a savings out over all the licenses instead of just giving some type of a cut to the 750 or so that may consolidate under the way the statute or the way this bill is written.
One bill at a time, right?
Yeah. It's a conversation point that if we're charging more than these small businesses and we're trying to help small businesses, then maybe that's a conversation that we need to have as well as we go through this process.
And I'd like to correct, I think I said inventory, I meant personal and business property assessments is what I meant to say. And I make mistakes here pretty frequently, and I'd like to correct it myself if I get a chance. Any other questions on the fiscal note? Representative Guerra?
No, fiscal note, no.
And that's on the bill then?
Oh, just maybe it's in response to something Representative Osterman said, but you know, the sponsor is correct. If you look at the lines of businesses, if you ever filled one of these things out, there are tons of them. And it's often that you're like, well, I do that, and my business does this, and my business does that too. So it is a real problem for small businesses. The question is whether we're limiting the bill to small businesses, in my mind, and that's, you know, I mean, I like the concept too. Yeah, you could be a small business and have to check three boxes in theory.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harbinger, for companies that collect taxes on cigarettes and alcohol or transfer taxes that way to other federal or state or local municipalities, how would that complicate things if generally they have to have different business licenses for those parts of their business? How would that work under tax codes at federal and state and municipal for collection of those taxes and moving out there if they have one business? Like, is this going to be complicated for that?
Representative Newman, through the chair, we have a business licensing has an endorsement for tobacco retail sales of tobacco products, and that's they pay a fee for that. I want to say that's $100. On an annual basis per establishment. In other words, again, let's go to Bob's Inc. He can have a number of outlets throughout the state. As long as he's operating under that same license, he can get an endorsement for each of his gas stations, if you will. But I don't know tax implications.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to have some thought on that.
Did you have a comment, Representative Costello?
I do not.
Well, I think we've broadly talked about the fiscal note. Did you have a question, Representative Guttenberg?
Yes, I did. And
I'll recognize Representative Guttenberg is here first, so then you can ask questions since you're now here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, allowing me that privilege.
Been here for a while.
I wouldn't mind being able to ask questions if I wasn't here either. You're the sponsor, so I imagine you're the first. You're still the present. You're still presenting, but I'm wondering. You know, I've had business license in my life, and I'm just wondering if you're complicating things for business insurance purposes. You know, you have a business license doing something that's dangerous and something that's innocuous, and you go for insurance, and a liability insurance or coverage of whatever is appropriate, and they're seeing multiple businesses on one license, and they are not sure who they're actually insuring or what function that is. Has that come up? That come up in Labor and Commerce?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. First of all, I just wanted to mention that this legislation would not require people to apply for multiple lines under one business name. So if the person who has the business feels that they benefit more by keeping it under one name for those purposes that you mentioned, it would be my advice to them that they not take advantage of this bill if it were to pass. And those are questions I think that are best left to the individuals who are in business. I mean, I personally would not. I would weigh the cost and benefit of combining my business using that kind of criteria. And so that would be my response to that.
That could probably be the recommendation of their insurance carrier as well.
It's, I think every small business makes those daily decisions on with workman's comp complications and what type of even jobs they can bid, because they don't have if it changes their risk assessment. So that probably has the same implication of how they'd list their business on a line. So this is something that folks wouldn't necessarily jump into without thinking about it. They're probably more appropriate for the types of examples I gave than maybe for somebody that's in a construction business, or that's up to, at least folks will have the choice to analyze what they're, I think that's the bigger question than the de minimis impact on government. It's the individual decisions that businesses can and do make every day of the week as they figure out their risk portfolios, as they're making them every day right now. Workman's comp is one of the big ones if you're in the excavation business or any kind of construction. So there were some members of, welcome Representative Holmes. Representative Costello, you heard the questions here. There, some of them seem we can easily rectify. Others are going to be judgment calls. So we'll bring this up hopefully much sooner than later. I'd like to have it up again this week if we can. You heard the questions from individual members. I think you know you and your staff. I usually call everybody their last name, but I can't pronounce Charles, so I'm going to break my rule. So.
Mr. Co-Chair, it's Ginshard.
I could have easily messed that one up in an embarrassing way.
I do want to thank you for hearing the bill, and one of the questions that I ask, and I would hope that we all look at, is when we talk about the role of government, and I think it's incumbent upon us to ask the question, what, if any, value is being created in this activity that government is asking for? And when I ask that question about the requirement that for every line of business an Alaskan has to file and get a business license, the answer is there is none. And the other question that I ask is, if there is a value in licensing separate lines of business, then where is the example where a person is licensed to do business in one area but they were turned down in another? And the answer there is no example. And that is because what value the state is providing by requiring a license is met by that license. And why we care whether or not somebody is doing real estate business and then teaching real estate, I think is a prime example of why a bill like this would make sense for us to pass. And I appreciate the questions. We'll definitely look into them and the time that the committee has spent on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we'll set aside House Bill 32, and I'm sure you'll remind us if it's still here after too long.
I will.
We'll just take a brief at ease. Finance, come back to order. We have that was the easy bill for today. So next we have before us House Bill 187, and I don't believe that's changed from introduction, but it's been here since last year. Mr. Jackson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Good afternoon, and members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson and the House Labor and Commerce Committee. The bill before you today, House Bill 187, was introduced at the request of the department and is an attempt to levelize the dramatic changes in the licensing fees, professional licensing fees, I should say. The stability provided by this concept in the out years will be of great benefit to those license holders. To accomplish this, as I'm sure you've seen in the fiscal note, we propose to transfer the costs for using general fund dollars to cover investigatory costs. Currently, these costs are spread across other like license holders. These investigations are important because they do provide a consumer protection portion for the people of the state of Alaska. So it is not something that we want to see go away. But since it is a consumer protection issue, it seems appropriate that the consumers of the state of Alaska should bear at least some of the cost. Currently, they do not, with the exception of anything that is passed on by license holders in the course of their doing business. Mr. Chairman, as you've seen behind us, and he's spoken for some time now before the committee, Mr. Haberger, the director of the Division of Corporation Business and Professional Licenses, here to really get into some of the nuts and bolts down deep in the bill. We also have Joellen Hanrahan from the department.
You prepped us pretty well. I think she mentioned the bill at least 20 times during her briefing, but I think she had Representative Hawker as a sponsor several times. So. But
Representative Hawker.
Well, that was Ms. Hanrahan at the time. Yeah, no, you did multiple times. But so this committee has heard about this bill, and with bated breath, it was so lauded in advance that I'm surprised it's not going to just sail out of here. But I think it's the zeros behind some of those numbers, and some of the concerns by the individual boards.
Absolutely, Mr. Co-Chair. I understand there are some concerns from the department or from the committee members, and again, that's part of the reason that we've asked the folks from the department and the division to be here to address those issues.
I think Ms. Hanrahan was. Why don't you just join the sponsor's representative here, and you can interject as you need to, Mr. Jackson, or as you wish to. Or requested to, I guess. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Joellen Hanrahan, Deputy Commissioner for Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss HB 187. I'm a little hesitant to utter it after my last meeting, but since it's the focus of this meeting, I'll refer to it as the HB 187. And the purpose of the bill before you is really to help mitigate some spiking of the licensing program costs and to provide alternatives for smoothing the potential for spiking of licensing fees. The bill allows, as Conrad spoke to, for general fund support. It allows for appropriations of general fund and to be used in the calculations of licensing fees. The department has chosen to apply that general fund appropriation to investigations because they are at times unpredictable costs of consumer protection. For example, of the 39 professional licensing programs, 36 have experienced at least 1 year with a 25% or greater change in investigative costs over a five-year period. The impact on small programs of a 25% or greater change in costs can be very significant. During the same time period, investigator costs that were charged directly to licensing programs varied in total from a low of $876,000 to a high of $1.7 million. These variances really speak to the dramatic effect that an outlier year can have on licensing fees and to the uneven nature of investigations. As Mr. Conrad spoke to, investigations are a consumer protection function, and perhaps we should be viewing that as a public benefit to all Alaskans, and as all Alaskans are beneficiaries of professional licensing services. The other things that the bill allows is averaging of revenue and expenses from current and prior year bienniums and extending the fee collection recovery period over multiple bienniums. Both of those tools will help level out the fees over time. The bill also allows for consolidation of fee types into a single fee. Some professions may have 10 different types of fees. This would allow a consolidation of those 10 types of fees into just one licensing fee. These proposed changes are permissive. They're not mandatory. And they do not reduce the authority of the boards. And previously in this committee, I've stated that we have a collective responsibility to balance the encouragement of a positive business climate with the requirements of appropriate accountability and the protection of consumers. This conversation generally includes the push and pull between proposed regulation, public input, and policy decisions. This bill is a continuation of the department's ongoing commitment to address professional licensing issues while focusing on a positive climate that will help stabilize fees and provide consistency for the professions. I say ongoing commitment as there's been a number of efforts and solutions that the department has grappled with over the last 2 to 3 years to try to address errors or issues that accumulated over an 8-year period. In summary, HB 187 provides tools for the boards, the commissions, and the division to modulate professional licensing fee adjustments and encourage a positive business climate.
Question, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I'd ask Mr. Hobinger is if the state had ever collected any fees or license or penalties if a business did not have a license. Yet the department spends $2,566,000 a year for licensing enforcement. I'm missing something here. If they've never had a penalty for not having licenses, why do we spend so much on license enforcement? And I understand it's for the industry, but I'm confused.
Microphone, please. Is coming. No. If you're okay.
Mr. Abinger, I guess.
Representative Newman, through the co-chair. Professional licensing takes up quite a lion's share, if you will, of investigative time. We have those 39 programs, professional licensing programs under Title VIII, and although we do spend time on business licensing, which we spoke about earlier, making sure that we are responsive to a complaint of the public, making sure that we're responsive to an issue that a board has brought to us, to our attention, and going through that investigative process, I don't have the exact percentage, but I know it's significant compared to business licensing. I'm going to estimate somewhere in the 90 percentile as far as their time, maybe higher than that.
And Mr. Chair, so I'm assuming this, the difference here is professional license as opposed to standard business license then.
Representative Newman, through the co-chair, that is correct. This is professional licensing.
Clarifying. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess before we get to too many more questions, I just, Ms. Hanrahan, on the leveling out, I think this is the Finance Committee. What is who gets smoothed on this leveling out, and how much does the smoothing cost?
Mr. Chairman, the professions would benefit from a smoothing of the revenue, so an expenditure. So how that would work is instead of looking at just one biennium of revenues and expenditures, which may be have some exceptional costs in it, we could look at two or three bienniums and average that amount out when calculating fees. Then we could spread those fees collection over two or three bienniums. And the professional licensing licensees would be the benefit from that. Mr. Hedbiger may have some examples.
The investigation costs to the away. What's the general fund impact?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear that.
During when you were prefacing this bill with another, you were talking, you were referencing bearing the investigation costs as part of the state's responsibility. What's the price tag on that?
The price tag for the fiscal note for this is $1.8 million.
You know, I've read it, but I just, for folks listening, and I've got a co-chair here that's trying to do his own smoothing. Representative Wilson, Costello, Osterman, and put Zafir in the queue, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do agree that the licensing board shouldn't have to pay for the investigations. I mean, it's to keep people doing what they're supposed to do. So for the right people, having to pay for those doing wrong. So, but I need to understand, I guess, first of all, how many investigations are there, you know, throughout the boards that you're doing per year? And then of those, and you probably can't answer some of these questions now, is how many are found guilty of the activity that the investigation began with, and then how much do we collect once the whole investigation's over? Because the way I read the fiscal note is you're just talking about the investigations that are done and how much, I'm assuming, average cost per year throughout all of them. But what's not here is, do we ever collect from those who are found guilty?
Ms. Hanrahan or Habiger.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I'll try to answer that, and Don may have more detailed information. But we have about 1,300 matters brought to the attention of our investigators every year. I believe we have a staff of about 18 positions, investigators. Not all of those matters result in a case. There's various steps along the way, and Mr. Hebiger can speak to those steps. Some do end up in civil. We have a civil authority to fine if there's violation of statute. The amount we can fine is limited by statute. We do, I believe it's around, depending on the year, between $150,000 and $250,000 in fines. And I will hand it over to Mr. Hebiger for more detail.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Wilson. An investigation, we've set up our investigative processes so that, number one, we're responsive to the public, a board member, fielding those calls. We require that if somebody is willing to complain to us, that they send us something in writing. It's just a gateway to make sure that we have the facts and we can investigate. Once they're willing to do that, and that's the 1,300, that's includes anybody contacting us. And then it gets refined a little bit more as we go from there. We make sure that there's jurisdiction. I think we spoke about that last week, making sure that it's a licensing issue, that it affects, that statutes or regulations actually address the complainant that we receive, and to make sure that we can gather evidence that indicates a violation has occurred. When we get down toward that end of the investigations, and actually I should add, there's a number of points where we bring an issue to a single board member. At that time, it's an appointed member from the board. It's a professional. They're part of that profession. They will help advise us this is a real issue or this is not an issue. If we go through all those steps and ultimately take it through an investigation that concludes the preponderance of evidence is a violation has occurred, then a licensing action is going to take place. Last year, I want to say we had about 230 actions, if I recall, for those that actually had a disciplinary action by a board against a licensee or the division, actually.
Follow up? Okay, so that's 1,300 a year, just issues, correct? The 1,300 you use, that's per year?
Yes.
Okay, and you have 18 positions, which comes out about 70 cases per position, which is about 6 per month. And then if only 230 actions, which is only 20% of those, but you still, at the end of the game, it's not about fining. I mean, that may be limited. You know, I'm going to use APOC as an example because we had things in our paper that talked about it. They actually charge back to anybody who was penalties for that the actual fees of the investigation. So of the 230 that get to a point to where I'm assuming they have been found to have done something wrong, I'm not talking about the fines that are given. Are they also charged for all the time it took to get to that point?
Representative Wilson, through the co-chair, our system has a
civil fine penalty system. We collect it. It goes to the general fund. We do not have authority assign an investigative fee to that person. So we're not collecting for the time, I think, is the question.
Mr. Chair, that was the question. So I think that's one thing we need to look at. If there's no authority to collect what's causing for this investigation, but I'd also like to know a little more detail, not necessarily today, on the 80% that are looked at. I mean, if people can just pick up the phone and it starts an investigation, I don't know, the numbers aren't coming out with me. Where if only 230 people a year for 18 positions, we're paying a lot of money. So although I agree that it shouldn't go to the board, first of all, I think we need to look at the authority, because people who are guilty should pay for what it costs for the investigation. But I guess I don't know how we get it, Mr. Chair, figuring out 18 positions, and at the end of the day, we're only talking about 230 people being found guilty in some aspect. But I'll talk to the sponsor.
Costello and then Osterman.
Thank you. My question is related to Representative Wilson. So I know currently you mentioned just now that there's one member of the board who's privy to the information as the investigation's ongoing. And it was my understanding that it was limited to that one because there's some dynamic there where the board, if they find somebody guilty, they're actually, or if the investigation continues, then their fees are going, there's reasons to continue an investigation, and there are reasons to not continue an investigation. And so if this bill were to pass, would you open up the entire board to being privy to that information, since the result of the investigation no longer will be affecting them financially in the same way? And it seems like it would benefit the investigation to have more of a judgment on whether or not they continue it or they see it, to fruition.
Representative Costello, through the co-chair, the answer, I believe, is no. And the reason for that is ultimately a board will sit in judgment over that license. And I am told by attorneys, Department of Law, that it's improper for us to precondition or give too much information to essentially the judging panel. And so to preserve the rights of a licensee, we are careful about that, and we can't give them too much information, which is why the process of an individual appointee from a board who is a licensee that can help us discern whether it is a professional practice matter that ought to go through the complete investigation, which will lead to an action, or if, in fact, it ought to be stopped before we go through all those processes, has occurred.
And one follow-up question. Have the boards individually weighed in on this legislation?
Representative Costello.
Two of them are in public testimony.
So two of the 39.
Actually, the number is, we've been talking to the boards throughout the summer, if you will, during their regular scheduled meetings, and 14 have indicated some level of support. It's either through their meetings, discussions, and the minutes. Some have written formal letters saying we support it, and others have passed a motion that's in their minutes. So that and the others have all heard about it, but they've taken no action.
Thank you.
Representative Osterman, and then Garrett, and then we'll go to public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, I like the idea of the bill, trying to figure out how you stabilize a little bit more within your I often thought that this whole process of investigations should just go to the Department of Law and let them handle it, and you guys have a flat fee across the board for your licenses, but this may be the answer. I've got several.
Fire away, Mr. Co-Chair.
The first one, the single fine system, as I understood you correctly, is that it's just a single fine. There's no restitution that
is involved within your statutes.
Co-Chair Osterman,
let me clarify that. Getting back to Representative Wilson's picking up the cost of the investigation and things like that.
What has evolved is a board will determine the severity of an issue, and they may assign a fee structure for that. For example, continuing education violation. You didn't take your classes on time when you renewed, versus some kind of unfit practice issue where they need to be a little more aggressive. They have, through a matrix, have determined what activity will receive generally a spread of fine. We work with that. We will essentially suggest back to the board based on your parameters, and we often do it through a consent agreement, what the fine ought to be. If the board accepts that, then that's how that works. Now, anything that comes into the division is deposited into the general fund.
The matrix that you talked about, is that in statute or regulation?
Usually it's an action of the board, and they'll move on that, and then they hand it to us, and that's what we work with.
So it's not a statute. It's regulation of some sorts that you have that allows them to do that? Or is there's no statute, there's no regulation, the board just does what it wants to do?
Representative Osterman, through the co-chair, the way, as I look at
question, right?
Yeah, Title 8, you give the board's jurisdiction over the licensees. You've done it through statute. Then you allow them to, you know, make sure they license and punish, if you will, or take action against their colleagues, their professionals.
In reference to, I think you were talking about confidentiality a minute ago in reference to when you release information. So a doctor in Anchorage files a complaint against another doctor in Anchorage. When does that become public notice of who filed the complaint?
Representative Osterman, it's one of the complaints we hear because it's not a public issue until a board takes an action or an accusation is filed. An investigation, particularly for a healthcare professional, because of the need to make sure that we have that preponderance of evidence, and gathering that evidence may take some time. Again, it's not almost till the end. Now, a single board member may know about it very early on. They may be advising us if it indeed is a practice issue that ought to be of concern. But public won't hear about it until very end of the process.
Okay. A couple other questions, Mr. Chairman. When Representative Wilson asked about the convictions, and you mentioned 230 cases that actually go to investigation, I assume you track what kind of what the general fund gets out of that in any convictions. I mean, do you have a dollar figure that you've tracked to see all this effort that your investigators are doing and what kind of money comes to the general fund?
Representative Osterman, yes, we have a figure, but it's a spread, and it depends upon the year. I think the low end that I've looked at is about $150,000. The high end approaches $300,000 in fines.
Per year?
Per year.
Okay. The $18.8 million that we're talking about, general funds, does that cover 100% of the investigations that you're talking about, or is that a percentage of the investigation cost?
Representative Osterman, it's the personal services time. That's the element that we're talking about. It is any time that investigator spends on any case responding to the public. Now, the breakout is essentially two-thirds investigative time, and the cost, I should say. The total cost is I'm going to say 2.5 per year. I'm not 100% sure of that. However, about 66% is investigative time. That last 33% is Department of Law, expert witnesses, any other activity, Office of Administrative Hearings. So the licensees themselves would still take on that last third.
So I didn't quite catch that. The personal services could be administrative personal services that you're talking about, including the commissioner's office, personal services, et cetera, all through the divisions?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, the $1.8 million is specific to the 18 investigator positions.
Okay.
If I may, Representative Osterman, through the chair, I want to emphasize that in the process, and we call these investigations, but there is a point where it becomes a true investigation. We are careful about those 1,300 matters that get reported to us. It's a distilling process down to at what point does it truly become an investigation. And that's partially the reason we are also careful about making that information public, because we certainly don't want to defame anybody or have frivolous actions occurring.
Mr. Chairman, and the reason that I ask that question is that, you know, I get calls every now and then from, in small communities like myself and my communities, that they're hesitant to file complaints because they think it'll be public information right away and they don't want to get into the small town politics of what goes on. But as long as that information is held until there's actually an investigation, I think it's a different scenario than what I'm hearing. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure this bill does what I think it does. So go along with me and tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, that's an open invitation. Please proceed.
Well, it was an open invitation to the general public, Mr. Chair, just to the folks at the table. The currently, under current law, the costs of investigation, administration of a board, all the costs of a board, including investigation, are borne by the members in terms of fees. Is that correct?
Representative Garrett, through the chair, that is correct.
And the change that you want is for the license, for the investigation portion, if it's too high in a particular year, to be collected to make the state whole over a number of years rather than in just the next year. Is that correct?
Representative Garrett, through the chair, we are proposing that the investigator positions be funded with general fund every year.
Through the chair. And is it your intention that the board that the investigation was relative to, that the members of that board, the professional members, then compensate the state for the cost of that investigation?
Representative Garrett, the members of that particular profession would not compensate the state for the cost of the investigator's time on that investigation. The members of the board would, the members of the profession would still need to include in the cost of their fee would include the cost of any mediation in hearing, any expert witness costs associated with an investigation, or the Department of Law costs.
Through the chair. So then I had a misunderstanding. So now you're transferring the full cost of the investigation once it hits the investigation level to the general fund, and the general fund doesn't get compensation for it at that point?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, we are transferring the cost of the investigator positions, the cost of the PCNs, to the general fund. The cost of the expert witnesses, the cost of any mediations or hearings would still be borne by the professional licensees.
Thank you. And then through the chair, as I look at the fiscal note, I see a zero fiscal note, but if the cost of the investigator is for investigators are, for example, $1.8 million a year, if this bill passes, the state will never see that $1.8 million a year again. I mean, that's just the state general fund will pay that cost, and the profession will not anymore. Is that correct?
Correct. The general fund would pay that cost.
And we won't get reimbursed.
Garrett, we would not get reimbursed. I represent Gareth Huchera. I also want to note that it's a zero fiscal note because it is a fund change. It's changing from receipt-supported services to a general fund.
It's coming from a different pocket.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair. But if previously the state was being compensated with receipt-supported services, we were being compensated, and now you're saying we're not going to get compensated anymore for investigation costs, the cost of the investigators, through any source of funds?
Representative Guerra, the state will not be compensated for the cost of the investigations. The state,
The fiscal note reflects what the operating budget, the fund sources change, and that is a change. Not to speak for you, is that correct?
No change.
That is correct.
No change in the budget, but a change in the sources.
That is correct, Mr.
Chairman. Through the chair, I'm not going to hold the committee because I don't understand how I don't understand.
That's not an issue without contention, but it's. I think they're factual in their fiscal note because it. But there's a big asterisk there.
If I could ask this question just please, so I can try and understand. Tell me where my understanding is wrong. My understanding is that currently, the members of the profession pay the cost of the investigation through receipt-supported services. They are no longer going to do that. How does that become a zero fiscal note?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, you are correct that currently the cost of the investigator PCNs is paid for through receipt-supported services. With this change, the cost of those investigators would be paid by general fund. It is a zero fiscal note because there's no increase in the budget. There is just a change in the funding source for the budget.
So the
still relevant to our budget discussion, but the zero fiscal note is accurate, but there's a big asterisk there.
So are you going to calculate member fees to be high enough to cover the cost of the investigators, or member fees going to go down to the point where they don't cover the cost of the investigators anymore?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, the purpose of this, one of the purposes of this is to stabilize the fees at a lower cost because the members would not be paying the cost of the investigator PCNs.
And my discussion wasn't an endorsement of their approach, just an explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got to speak to folks outside later on. I don't want to hold everybody up.
So do I. Very quickly, I'm going to go to the public comment. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Is it correct then to say that we collected roughly $1.8 million last year in fees that covered the investigations? Is that correct?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, it is correct to say that the way the statute is written, we should be collecting any expense that these boards are costing the state.
And if I may, last year it was roughly what this fiscal note is showing, $1.8 million for the PCNs.
Representative Munoz, the state is collecting fees for more than the cost of these investigators. They're collecting the cost for processing, for examinations, for the underlying state infrastructure to provide those services. So the state collects through the fees to cover those costs.
Okay. Can I just have one more question? Could you provide me with the total costs that your department brings in for the fees? If you don't have it now, I can get it later.
Yes, I can do that.
Thank you.
We are going to go to public testimony next. We had a little bit of sidetrack there besides our best intents, but they're all very legitimate questions. Going to the public testimony in Anchorage. Ms. Center, are you still there?
Yes,
Yes. My name is Patricia Center, and I'm Professional Practice Director with the Alaska Nurses Association. Mr. Chair, the Nurses Association is in support of parts of these bills, especially the parts dealing with calculating license fees based on a two-year license renewal cycle rather than yearly, which is what current statute requires. We are also not opposed to amortizing individual board expenses over a longer period of time. And we have no objection to the division collecting fewer fees or smaller fees and putting these all in one increase. What we do have objection to, though, is the shifting of total cost of paying for investigators from licensing fees to general funds, which is what the division was a little bit unclear about previously. In a time of billion-dollar budget shortfalls, it does not make sense to increase the cost to the general fund of $1.8 million. This bill would effectively reduce the income coming into the state by that amount. So currently, each board calculates their fees based on the actual cost of their section or the people they are, licensees that they are responsible for. So the Board of Nursing covers the cost of all the staff, the Hansel Board of Nursing staff, and the investigators and the investigations. And that those actual costs are determined each year, along with an overhead cost for the division as a whole. The Board of Nursing covers 16,000 licensees, which is about a third of the total licensees in the state. We are fortunate to be that large because we can cover the ups and downs in terms of investigative costs. We also pay, by the way, a third of the overhead for the division. We understand that smaller boards have difficulty covering expensive investigations because of their small licensee base. We would suggest that a cheaper alternative would be to create a fund to help pay for expensive investigations. For instance, a fund could be set up to pay for investigations that cost over $10,000. There are fewer investigations that have a large charge, so this approach would be a much cheaper to the state than taking over all the fee costs of the investigators. From a historical perspective, the decision to have licensee fees pay for the cost of boards was made during a time of diminishing state revenues, and I don't know if that was in the 80s or early 90s. We do not think that over the next several years the division is going to want to be reliant on a diminishing source of general fund revenues when they could have had a more steady income source from licensee fees. If the division can't get enough general funds to pay for the investigators, how are they going to prioritize investigations? And if this authority that we are giving them is permissive, are they going to take general funds to pay for investigations for some boards and not others? The whole situation in the future has us a little concerned. And I must say that I attend Board of Nursing meetings, and the concerns I'm raising here are very similar that the Board of Nursing has had.
Question for Ms. Center? I hope you'll remain an active participant in this discussion. We are not going to be disposing of this bill today, so I think I believe you already are communicating with members. I know I've gotten an email from one of the nurses, so it sounds like you were one of the bigger players in this with the stake in it, so I appreciate hearing your testimony, and I hope we've We'll keep public testimony on this open because this affects a lot of people. I want to make sure that not just your profession but others get a chance to comment on this. We'll have this more than one day as it's becoming real clear. So thank you very much, Ms. Center. Next, we have Dale Nelson, also from Anchorage. Mr. Nelson, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Probably a little louder.
I'm now at the microphone. Can you hear me?
No, perfect.
All right. For the record, my name is Dale Nelson, and I'm here as the chair of the Legislative Liaison Committee for the Alaska Professional Design Council. And the Alaska Professional Design Council has some 5,000 plus registered professionals. And thank you also very much for you guys all working today. This is President's Day, and so hard at work. First of all, I had some notes I want to talk to, and after listening you folks talk, I'm still very confused and even more confused now, and I just wanted to reach back as to the investigator. And last year we had before you a bill that went through the House, went through the Senate, and was signed by the governor, and that was to have an investigator assigned to the Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors Board full-time. And that has been accomplished in its work in progress. And then they listen to this conversation here, and I'm scratching my head what all is going to take place, because our fees are to cover the cost of that investigator, not to the general fund, but to when we pay our fees, it goes to that position. And speaking of fees, is that last year our fees doubled, and with that we sent out this is a lead into where I'm going next. We sent a letter out to this, and we supported the fact that it was for the investigator, but with all the other things that took place under that, and we questioned them, and we asked, where are all the costs? We wanted to know the costs. As to what is the reasoning for all of these fees, you know, is it the AG's office, is it this, or is it that, or is it the board activities, so forth. We received none. In our letter that was sent to the fee increase, we just got a thank you, and there was no discussion or any comeback from that. So there is concern, and that which leads into the point that the first section one, and if you take a look at all the way through the HB 187, is that it talks to a large number of boards, and ALS is silent there, of which I'm a fee-paying member, dues-paying member, whatever, and to the fact that it goes through there and it talks about all of the fees and the requirements and all that is going to take place. There's some 21 line items, and then if you move over to, and I'm going to stop all these things, but if you move over to page 4, the department shall establish by regulation fee levels, and it goes on through that. Large concern as to what happened this last time. There should be a clear clarity as to where these fees are going. And this is a question we've asked the Architects, Engineers, Land Surveyors Board, as well as when we meet with our constituents, in which we just finished a fly-in where we're there in your halls of the building. And this is a question we ask. We need to know where these fees are going. And that on there, you're talking to some extent on the fiscal note, and that was one of my questions, so I'm not going to go there. But how is it zero if there are these costs and we're in tight times? And so is this a legitimate? Let me go on to there's a concern as to the implementation. I heard hesitation as to how these are implemented, how this is being developed, and this is not a testimony for the previous bill, House Bill 32, but if you look at our members, our registered members, many of them are licensed professionals that have a business license, and they are individuals. So how does this all come about? And if I may step back one more time to the investigator, one of the things that we talked about, the value of the investigator being present or working for the ALS board, it's answers to another, as you all know, to somebody else, but it works this primarily for the ALS board, is that to take a look at, is it a frivolous bill or a complaint? You got to take a look at it. Those things have to be aired and shared, however it's done. I'm just a licensed member of the ALS, but I'm not privy to all that stuff, and that's not for me to do. But the thing is, it saves a lot of money and time for the state of Alaska if they go down the wrong path, and which happens oftentimes. You know, it's part of life. Let me check my notes. I mentioned the clarity. We need to know clarity as to costs, where these costs are going, what is it charged to, and to this bill, how does this affect its quiet all the way through, and excuse me, and it's all about fees. And if you go back to the sectional analysis, it goes about fees, but it is so difficult to connect the dots as to our board, the ALS, but maybe the other boards do too. And I would like to see some of this communications. We have a pretty good contact with our board, and it's via the Alaska Professional Design Council. So anyway, those are our notes. We're not in favor of this bill. It definitely needs a lot of discussion, in our opinion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. I appreciate your comments on this. And keep in touch. You know the members of the committee, and you know your members know the members of the committee. So, Mr. Jackson and Ms. Hanrahan, why don't you come back? We have a little bit of clumsiness here, or potential in it. This is an administration bill, but you're carrying it. So, Mr. Jackson, how would you like? Would you like members to work through you, or Ms. Hand, for a purpose of efficiency and clarity? What's your preference?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson again. I believe that our office has a very good working relationship with the department, and it's really, I would say, either is fine, whatever the committee's wishes would be.
Unless we get different answers, and then we have to figure that out.
I will endeavor to make sure that does not
happen. Okay. Well, it's one of the things. I just want to know certainly Ms. Hanrahan, it's administration's bill, but your boss is carrying it as a sponsor for the committee, even if it's at the request. So you will be the arbiter of decisions. I mean, through your office when we're talking, you'll be the voice working through Ms. Hanrahan.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Osterman.
Well, first off, are you leaving public testimony open? Is that what you're
Yes.
Saying? Okay. A couple quick questions, I hope. When you talk about trying to balance the revenues over a period of time, over a couple of different cycles, two-year cycles, you said two or three. Is there going to be some type of criteria set down for which type of a board it is to know whether they have some clarity as to whether it's going to be over two or three or four, whatever number you're going to choose? And I'm assuming that the bill allows the department to make that choice.
Well, Representative Osterman, through the chair, I want to reiterate that the bill allows the boards and the commissions and the divisions to use this tool. So we go to the board with the information on any proposed fees change. We would have that discussion with them on what is the recommended fee, what is the recommended timeline from the department, the number of bienniums to use, and have their input on that process.
So again, this, Mr. Chairman, we've set up the board to do whatever it wants outside of statute or outside of regulation. I mean, there's no. Are you talking about a regulation that would do that, or is it again?
Representative Osterman, under statute, we are required to have board input as we're setting these fees. It's part of the process.
But the board makes the decision.
based upon their investigations?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, I believe that, and Mr. Habergum has had a lot more experience on setting these fees than I have, been through the process many times between the issue of the revenues and expenditures and the level of the fees, and that is where I was speaking to. We have that collective responsibility because there is the push-pull of the regulation, which is the recommended fee, and public input and policy. I believe all those things in some way impact the level of a fee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. One other quick question. The consolidation of certain fee types, what does fee types mean?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, that is where a profession may have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different types of fees. They may have an examination fee, a registration fee. They may have certain types of permit fees, along with a license fee. This bill would allow consolidation of those into one fee, and that would be a discussion with the board on whether that's what they would like to have for their profession as one fee, and whether administrative efficiencies could be gained in that process. Currently, we're tracking 457 types of fees in professional licensing program. This allows us to consolidate those and achieve some administrative efficiencies.
Okay, thank you.
So Newman and then Costello. And then
thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to go to 25 till. So Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hanrahan, not Mr. Hanrahan, what I'm trying to get is a balance sheet here. And as how much money is recovered back in fees and penalties from the board's decisions on your recommendations from your investigators, and I'm trying to follow the dollar here. So I understand the gist of the bill is those fees are covered right now by the professional licensing, and you would just, and because those fees that are collected have to be swept to the general fund, so you'd like to see the general fund come back and cover the cost of your investigators. I'm trying to get a balance on what the cost is. How much do you generally collect in fees on penalties and balances as opposed to the $1.8 million out of the general fund? What's the balance sheet?
Representative Newman, I don't have the total on what we collect through the professional licensing program right at this moment, but I do want to clarify that we are the fees actually are collected and they support the program now.
They do not sweep?
They do not sweep into the general fund. Fines sweep into the general fund, not fees. The fees are collected and actually support the program. And I will get back to you with the total revenue in fees and the total revenue in fines for the past year.
Mr. Chair, that was, you know, my consideration. If the fines, are they matching up with the cost for the investigations?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I can tell you that the fines do not match up with the cost of the investigation. The fines range from $150,000 to $300,000.
Through the chair, so I guess what I'm trying to get a better understanding of the Justin is that right now the professional licensing's members have to cover the differential as opposed to the general fund?
Representative Newman, that is, through the chair, that is correct.
Clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Costello and then Guerra.
Oh, thank you, through the chair. Ms. Hanrahan, I know we've, through the budget subcommittee, we've looked at this over several years, and at one point the department had provided me with a large Excel spreadsheet that showed a look back over time of all of the professional licenses and the fees that they were assigned on an annual basis. And I would like it for you to provide that to the committee members, because I think, as with anything, the more we understand the problem that we're trying to solve, and that to me was very helpful because we saw these huge spikes, and I think it's very hard for people planning their business and the costs associated with it to build into their business plan this just Mount McKinley every couple of years in terms of the spiking, and I would request that the department provide that spreadsheet to us. And then my other question was, I know at one point we had discussions about the different professional license boards providing their budgets online so that the license holders could just go and look at where their, you know, where their fee, what their fees were paying for. And have you had any conversation within the department about moving to a system where people in the public could just go online and look at the budget?
Representative Costello, we do publish online the quarterly financial reports, which show whether where the money has been spent in personal services, travel, commodities, how much is indirect, how much is direct charges. Those reports are published online.
Thank you. And then with regards to the spreadsheet, is that something you could provide the committee?
Representative Costello, we will be glad to provide a spreadsheet. I'd like to follow up with you to see exactly which one it is. We're rather mired in spreadsheets on this particular issue.
As are we.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. On page 4, lines 5 through 7, this is the crux of my questions before, and I may be the only person on the committee that doesn't understand the intent of the bill. But it says that the costs to the professional group should approximate the regulatory cost for the licensing group. Does the regulatory cost for the licensing group include the investigation?
Representative,
they're all anxious to answer that, and they can't decide who.
Representative Guerra, through the chair. The cost of regulating the group includes the cost of the investigators. The language, as this is written, allows for other appropriations to be included in when calculating the fees, to be included in the equation of cost and revenue.
And through the chair. So it reads that the fees charged to the members of the group shall cover the cost of the regulatory cost, but in 1 year or in some years, maybe you might need a general fund supplement because there's a higher cost, but it's going to average over the course of years, right? So is the intention of this section that maybe on some years there will be a general fund supplement, but over the course of years the fees charged to members will make up for that so that we all break even?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, the intent of this section is to allow the state to provide other general fund, other appropriations, in addition to the program receipts appropriation. It is not, the section is not lined out as into what year that would be paid. The right. Fiscal note identifies that what we're asking for is that other appropriations be linked to the investigation cost of the PCNs for the investigators.
And then finally,
on an annual basis.
You're eating into Representative Guttenberg's minute here.
Forget it. I can't get the answer to my question.
We're going to be back on this again. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, there's 42 sections in the bill. A lot of them, going through them in the back, relate to different occupations, different licensing. Sometimes when we see bills like this, it's all the same. It's just how it relates to them. But these are all different. At the end of the day, I would assume, and I'm asking you if I'm right, that you're trying to put them on equal footing as far as what we're trying to accomplish on this bill.
Representative Guttenberg, with respect to the cost for investigations, we are trying to put them on equal footing.
And that's all you're doing, and that's, and I mean, you're changing, they're all a little bit different, well, they're all a lot different, but whether it's midwives or audiologists or, I mean, all their statutes are different, but that's pretty much, that's exactly what you're trying to accomplish.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, yes, we are.
Okay. Record reflect simultaneous nodding there going on. And there are a number of questions the members have had. I guess I'd encourage Commerce to spend some more time with Representative Guerra. Do you have a follow-up to leave with them?
Mr. Chair, No. I mean, I've never, on this committee, I've never been able to not get an answer to a question that seems so simple to me that I must be asking it wrong. So I will talk to people after the committee.
Well, and those people, I hope, but or well, we will.
Chairman, can I just make one point?
Please.
Thank you. And this is Ms. Hanrahan. As you look at consolidating the fees per licensee, if you could also look at the issue of adding the opportunity to get a business license at the same time as a professional license, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Mignosa, no. Chair, I definitely have that note.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Osterman.
I want to leave it with one question that you can bring back to the next time we have this bill hearing, and that is, with the consolidation of fees, with the general fund supplementing the fee collected for investigators, what does the reduced fees going to look like? What is the reduced amount of money to the department that's going to show up because of that?
And it's my goal to try to see if we can get resolution to this before we close out the budget for which Representative Costello was responsible in the subcommittee level, and Representative Osterman is shepherding, and we're all responsible for trying to figure out collectively. So that's we may not be able to get to that point, you'll help your bill a lot more if you can provide more clarity. And I'm speaking to the administration, not to you, Mr. Jackson, as much as I think they have the larger responsibility. You're performing a service through the Labor and Commerce Committee for the administration's bill. And I know you're familiar with it, and you're obviously, if it wasn't something you supported, you wouldn't help with it. I think the larger responsibility is on Commerce and the division. Did you have anything in closing, Mr.
No, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the committee's time, and I will work with Mr. Haberger and Ms. Hanrahan to get the answers to the committee, and I'm happy to visit offices and try to provide any more clarity that may be needed.
So we will stand in adjournment, setting both of our bills aside today, but hopefully to get them out on tomorrow's schedule. We have House Bill 211, Employment of Persons with Disabilities, and House Bill 263, it's a six-year extension of the Senior Benefits Payment Program. And from discussions I've had, it's the length of the extension has been the largest issue, so the other is pretty clear-cut. But, well, I guess nothing is clear-cut when it affects the budget, but that's been the issue of contention, is the length of the sunset extension. So with that, we will stand in adjournment. See everybody tomorrow.
And rest.